Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Do you suspect or maybe experiencing that you're having depression? Do you or a loved one have an issue with drugs or alcohol abuse? Joining us on this Medical Monday to address these issues is Dr. Jennifer Michaels, Medical Director of the Breen Center, Berkshire County's largest community mental health agency. Dr. Michaels, a great friend of the station, is also an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Massachusetts. She's board certified in both general and addiction psychiatry and has been in practice for over 15 years. Dr. Michaels, welcome back to Medical Monday. Every time you're on, the phone's ring off the hook, and everybody has a question, and those questions better from them than me. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, it's summertime, so in the summertime, does anything specific happen to addictions?
That's a good question, Alan. Sometimes the hot weather will make someone who's been sober think about a cold beer, and people are prone to relapse. They're out more, they're partying more, they're exposed to more substances. And of course, we're seeing these synthetic marijuanas, bath salts. So it's been an active season.
So what about people, parents who in all, you know, the kids have graduation parties and the rest of it, they're often underage and the rest. Do you have to deal with that, with the guilt feelings that come? Somebody gets in a car, something happens, somebody gives allows their kids thinking it's cool to have them, sometimes out of the best of motives, by having them there and taking away the keys, you know. Mm-hmm. What are we thinking about that?
Well, you know, it used to be that we thought, we're going to keep our kids safe. We'll have the keg, we'll have the party at our house, and we'll know where they are, and they'll be safe. Now we know that that's not really safe, because we've taught our kids that it's okay to drink, and if they go out and drive, they could have an accident or engage in, you know, some sexual behavior when they're intoxicated that they wouldn't do otherwise. So the message has changed, and it's that we don't want you drinking, it's dangerous for you, and let's do these five other fun alternative activities instead of getting drunk.
The kids just drink naturally. I mean, all parents have had the experience of having their kids say to them much later in life, you told us never to drink, but we did. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with that?
It's tough. You know, there's a misperception that everyone's doing it. That if you ask a kid, you ask a grown-up, they all do it. I did it. Everybody does it. But, you know, when we look at the data, not everyone's doing it.
I didn't do it.
You didn't do it. No. See? And yeah. So, and I didn't do it until later. Maybe I did it. But not everyone is drinking alcohol. Not everyone is smoking pot. But there's a perception that they are. And so kids feel a lot of pressure to comply. Actually, we have lower teen drinking rates than European countries. I mean, we're doing better than Europe, even though, you know, we feel like, you know, we have a problem. They have a bigger problem.
So let's go to Allison in Goshen, Massachusetts, 1-800-348-2551. Allison, you're on.
Thank you. I have a 32-year-old son who has schizophrenia, and he really hit bottom 10 years ago after 10 years of increasing mental illness building up to this. It's been a long, long haul, and he's finally, you know, been stabilized and willing to take his medications, his five different ones. Clozaril is the most important antipsychotic. And all of a sudden, in the last couple of weeks, he's decided he really wants to cut down on the Clozaril. It leaves him profoundly exhausted, and he doesn't feel well. He has nightmares. He drinks unbelievable quantities of coffee and smokes cigars at this point pretty much nonstop. But he's off of alcohol. He's not taking any drugs, illegal drugs at all. We're all very concerned in the family, and he won't really listen to us, you know. And I say, work with the medical folks you've got. And, of course, they've been cut back. You know, his med psychiatrist retired and hasn't been replaced. So I'm wondering what suggestions you have. I mean, you know, logic doesn't work.
Okay, so, Allison, if I could piggyback onto that question, let me let me try to focus this in a different way, and that is that I have known many schizophrenic patients who refuse to take the medicine after a while. What is it, Dr. Michaels, about that? What leads a patient to start to say, I hate these meds?
Well, you know, it's a good question. It's a clinical dilemma because these medications work, but they can have tons of side effects.
Yeah.
So if I said, Alan, if I said to you, I have a great medicine that will help you with this terrible problem you have, but you may gain weight, you're going to be terribly fatigued, you will have difficulty concentrating.
You may become impotent.
Yes, exactly. You may have sexual side effects.
Yeah.
And you'll probably have them the rest of your life. How would you feel about taking a medication that's helping your mental illness but potentially hurting everything else?
Well, in the balance, though, there's no question that being schizophrenic or not being schizophrenic seems to me to be quite clear that you'd rather not be schizophrenic. Where am I going wrong on that?
No, well, what happens is this, that people have acute severe episodes, and during that time they start medication, they get the benefit, they get better. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they get so much better, they forget that they really need the medication. There's an amnesia that occurs, that probably occurs for all of us with medicine. So what Allison described, we see with people who have bipolar disorder. They will stop their medication because they feel so, quote unquote, normal. And they don't like the dry mouth or the sexual side effects or the weight gain. And we struggle to help people to get on the right medicine that it minimizes side effects but treats the symptoms.
Are the meds getting any better?
We're getting a little better, and I think we're realizing that the amount you need when you're acutely ill is much greater than the amount you need when you're in remission.
That's what my brother was suggesting. He's a retired social worker. So John has gone on his own from 5 to 4 a day. It's less than a week so far. He feels lots better. I think it's partly he feels like he's had a choice. This is you know, something he decided rather than what everyone else was deciding for him.
You know, Allison, I've had patients who have come in to talk to me about lowering their medication. The best way to do it is with your treatment provider and to do it very slowly and to have frequent visits. And it may be that less is better, but schizophrenia is a chronic illness and it does require a lifetime of medication. So,
chronic meaning it will not be, it's not curable.
We cannot cure it. We're, you know, in psychiatry, we're not great at curing the illnesses. We are good at treating them,
but
very few cures exist.
Allison, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Let's go to James in Monroe, New York, 1-800-348-2551. James, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been taking a Prozac for about 2 years. I had a real problem while I was at work. I worry about everything. It makes actually causes me stomach problems. Now, one other time, the doctor sent me to another doctor, and they gave me something, and I had run out of it, and I couldn't get a hold of the doctor to get it renewed, and I actually had like an epileptic fit, and then it went away, and then I stopped taking it, and the doctor came back from vacation, and she put me on Prozac. Now, the Prozac is working good as far as that goes, as far as I'm not working anymore. I'm retired, and I mope around the house, and I know I got to do things. I just don't do it. So I don't know. I really want to get off this, but I don't know what to do.
Do you think the moping, let me ask a question before Dr. Michaels answers, just to identify this. Do you think that the moping is connected to the medicine?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Because I didn't have this before.
Dr. Michaels?
Okay. Well, it sounds a little complicated. Prozac is an antidepressant. It treats depression, and it also treats anxiety, and it sounds like it helped with your anxiety. James, did you start to mope around the time you retired, or do you think
when that... I started after about 3 or 4 months of taking Prozac.
Okay. All right. So it may be related to the Prozac, and I would suggest you see your doctor, let your doctor know that you're experiencing this, and perhaps you need a dose change or even a medication change. But it sounds to me like you have what we call residual symptoms of depression. You're better, but you're not all better. So give a call to your doctor and just let your doctor know what's going on. And I think there's a lot of hope that you'll feel all better with a medication change.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, best of luck.
Okay, bye.
1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in on any question relating to psychiatry or addiction, depression, this is a good time to do it. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from David Stein and Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, Family Dentistry, including laser cavity detection, computer-aided local anesthesia, micro-air abrasion, bonded composites, davidsteindds.com. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Laurie Stilwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Summer blooming bulbs and trees, shade shelter and sundial exhibitions and garden classes and workshops. Open daily 9 to 5, BerkshireBotanical.org. And Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh daily meats and seafood, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries. AdamsFarms.com.
We're ready for the results coming in from the West Coast, and they will be soon. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to have Dr. Jennifer Michaels with us today, We are waiting on your calls, and we'll go to Dee in Stafford Springs. Okay, Dee, you're on. Hey, Dee? Well, I think maybe we lost Dee. That's a shame. Okay, she'll call back, I'm sure. Okay. Whoa, something weird is happening here. Hold on a second. Hello? Is this Dee?
It is.
Okay, go ahead, Dee.
Hi. So, I'm bipolar. I've known for about 8 years, and I was heavily over-medicated, even with a good doctor, and have gone down on my meds with my doctor and still have a lot of cognitive problems, and just kind of wanted to comment on what the woman was saying about her schizophrenic relative. And, you know, it's a very complicated issue because, you know, it took me, and I'm not stupid, and it took me 7 tries to get the number down to call. And I think it's very hard for doctors to understand that, you know, we can't be over-medicated and still function. And I just kind of wanted to put that one out there.
Dee, I think you're bringing up some very good points. I think many times when a patient sees a doctor and has a symptom, the doctor wants to fix it. And oftentimes that means the doctor is going to prescribe yet another medication.
Yes, and that is what happened.
Yes. So what I'm seeing, I've been around, decades, and what I'm seeing is this explosion of medication that patients take. So it used to be that someone who was bipolar took maybe 1 or 2 medications. Now it's not unusual to see a patient on 7 or 8 medications.
Really?
I mean, it's very extreme.
Yeah, I was up to like 7 different ones at one point.
Yes, and we have a term for that. It's called polypharmacy, because we're giving you so many medications, and at some point we really don't know how the medications interact and if they're helping or hurting. So at the Breen Center, I've been working with staff to curtail polypharmacy and to really work with patients to limit the medications they receive. And also look at things like, for example, How much coffee are you drinking? I treated someone who didn't sleep well, and she was drinking 3 pots of coffee a day.
Wow.
So rather...
Actually, my doctor's very good about that sort of thing.
Great.
And right away, she cracked down on sleep hygiene, mm-hmm. caffeine intake, fish oil. Connecticut did just pass medical marijuana, but obviously that has been not strictly on the books. But it helped me reduce my benzodiazepine intake by more than half.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like your doctor is on the ball as far as limiting medications, reducing caffeine, and so we're looking.
I had to fight. I had mm-hmm. to advocate for myself.
Uh-huh.
And I spent 2 years as a complete zombie first.
That's very unfortunate. And my hope is that providers are getting the message that less often is better.
I don't know that they are, because mine is the best that I could find in my area. And it really took a lot of pushing on several different occasions for me to get to what is now a 3-med cocktail
mm-hmm.
that is... It has kept me very stable and I'm very comfortable.
Okay, Dee, I'm sorry, but I just want to make sure, because there are a lot of people behind you now. Jennifer Michaels, you want to add anything?
Yeah, you know, Dee, just a little twist in what you're saying I wanted to add. You said you were able to lower your benzodiazepine use because you were using medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
You also said you had some difficulty writing down, you know, the phone number that Alan was relating on the line. And, you know, medical marijuana is kind of a hot topic right now. So Alan and I were discussing how there's a lot of controversy, and it may have some benefits. Like you said, you lowered your benzodiazepines, but it can impair cognitive functioning or thinking clearly or memory.
So do benzodiazepines.
Yes, yes.
And more permanently, which was my concern.
Well, we don't know yet. I wish we had more information.
Well, this is what I read. I mean, I'll stop because you have other people in line. But I do a lot of reading, and that was what the reading on the benzodiazepines made me very uncomfortable with the long term heavy use.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and benzodiazepines, we're talking about Valium, Xanax, Ativan, has the risk of causing cognitive impairment with chronic use. So that is true. Unfortunately, long-term, you know, chronic use of marijuana can do the same thing. So we're in a place now where we need to do some more investigation, I think.
Dee, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Cheryl in New York. Okay, Cheryl, you're up.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hi. My question is it has a little bit to do with the last conversation that was just on.
Sure.
I have a GP that prescribes for me. I have been on Prozac on and off for probably the past 6 or 7 years. I find that worked best for me, but I don't think I get enough out of it. I take 20 milligrams a day. Lately, I've just felt like I'm also a middle-aged woman, so I'm sure a lot of it has to do with menopause. But I tried a different cocktail of citalopram and Wellbutrin, and I lost weight on the Wellbutrin because I gain weight on the Prozac terribly, and I hate that side effect of it. As far as the Wellbutrin goes, it gave me nightmares. The citalopram just gave me side effects that I think that were just, you know, they were physical side effects. So I stopped taking both of them, went back on the Prozac. Now I'm trying to wean myself off of the Prozac on different occasions, but I find that I get really angry. I'm just short-tempered. I have no patience. So because I can't control it on my own, I go back on the Prozac. So I just wanted to see if she had any suggestions for that.
Cheryl, it sounds like you've tried a lot of different things. Prozac may be helping you with your anger. We think of it as an antidepressant, but it also helps with irritability and anger issues. So it may be helping. The other thing is that when we stop antidepressants, sometimes we struggle with what's called discontinuation syndrome. And it can cause irritability, headaches, feeling lightheaded, and I don't know how rapidly you're tapering the Prozac, so it may be that your tapering is and your symptoms are caused by discontinuation.
Every other day, I'm weaning myself off to every other day. And it's 20 milligrams. I didn't think that was going to be too severe.
No, it's not severe, but, you know, you could try to do it more slowly, maybe going to 15 milligrams for a week or 10 days and then to 10 and see if that works. The other thing to think about is meditation, which has been shown to help with depressive symptoms, intense exercise, making sure you sleep adequately, you know, really looking at the other facets of your life that will fuel, you know, a kind of a balance in your emotions.
Yeah, it's not the depression so much as it is anxiety, I think, because I'm a high-strung type of person.
Look into mindfulness and meditation. Both of those treatments are so wonderful to help with anxiety.
That sounds good, because I really, really don't want to take medication. I really don't. I don't feel like I have to, but I feel like I have no control if I don't. I'd like to be able to get a little bit of mind control, I suppose. That's where I really need it. I don't think I need anger management. I'm just I'm irritable. Like you said, I'm irritable. I get angry easy. I kind of go off the deep end, you know, about little things. And I don't like myself when I'm like that. So I always feel like my only alternative is to go back on the medication.
You know, add some more tools in your toolbox, and it's meditation and mindfulness, and let's see what happens. I think you'll do very well.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Sure. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. Dr. Jennifer Michaels answering your questions. Do it now. You'll resent it if you don't. Let's go to James in Albany. James, you're on.
Hi there. I've been on Zoloft for, I guess, a year and a half or so. And, you know, before I got on the Zoloft, you know, what I explained to my doctor is I was I didn't care about anything. Nothing made me happy. Nothing made me excited. Every day was just bleh. You know, somebody could get me a gift or make me a cake out of nowhere just to try to be nice, and if anything, it would make me feel worse. You know, I had just this horrible image of myself. So I got on the Zoloft, and it was like a miracle. Everything was just perfect. Life was great. I was back to normal. It was like when I was 18 again. Awesome. It's been about a year and a half or so, and it's starting to go back. I'm definitely not like I was before, but I'm finding myself not excited about anything anymore. It's starting to go back down to just nothing matters, and I get kind of lazy sometimes. You know, I've got things to do, like the other guy was saying, and I just don't care, and I don't get anything done. So I'm wondering if I should look to change medications or talk to my doctor about just upping my dose or something like that.
Good question, James, and I would definitely recommend you talk to your physician. There's a term used in psychiatry, kind of an inelegant term called antidepressant poop out, meaning that the medicine just poops out, stops working, and that may be what you're suffering from, and the treatment is to raise the medication a little bit. It sounds like you had a wonderful response to Zoloft, and maybe you just need a little bit more.
Okay, then. Thank you.
James, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. And lots of lines open. Jennifer from Albany. Okay, Jennifer from Albany.
Hi, doctor. I just had a question for you about Depakote. I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 16 years ago, so when I was about 16 years old, and have been pretty much on Depakote ever since. And my one question is I really don't have any other side effects other than like hair loss. I get my hair falls out kind of regularly, and I didn't make the connection for many, many years. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for that. And then just in general, I'm wondering if you've ever seen anyone with bipolar 1 just grow out of it or become just not have it anymore. I mean, I've tried going off medication several times, and I've ended up hospitalized. And I've done it with doctor's help and, you know, trying to just eliminate everything I could from my diet that could possibly be causing anything, and getting regular sleep and exercise and doing the meditation and cognitive work with the therapist, and it just hasn't really worked.
Okay, great questions, Jennifer. First, bipolar 1 disorder is really a chronic illness, and I wish we had a cure for it, but we don't. So it's a disease that will probably be with you for life. That's the bad news. The good news is there are tons of different treatment modalities that really work, and Depakote is very effective. It sounds like you've had a good response.
Yeah.
Hair loss can happen with Depakote. There is treatment for it, though, and it's zinc and selenium. So you want to get a multivitamin. You should probably see a dermatologist. Zinc and selenium seem to help with the hair loss. Have you ever tried that?
You know, I've heard that. I maybe read it somewhere before, and I did talk to my dermatologist about it. He didn't really see a connection, and he just suggested biotin, which I do take, but didn't have any other suggestions.
Okay. What I have seen in my practice as most effective is a combination of zinc and selenium, and I would make that recommendation. As far as going off your medications, it's a sign probably that you feel so good and quote-unquote normal on your medication. That's a sign that it works and that you should just keep taking it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
1-800-348-2551. I don't want to lead you in the wrong direction here, but I did hear something out of the corner of my ear about medical marijuana before. And I know that in the past, some of our discussions, you're a very progressive person. I mean, your politics and the rest, I know that. But let me ask you this. You have some real concerns about marijuana, don't you?
I do, because we're talking about medical marijuana, but, you know, marijuana isn't a drug. It's a plant. And
so is aspirin, right?
Aspirin is a drug that comes from a plant.
Yeah.
But making marijuana legal for medical use would be kind of like saying, let's grow some poppy or papaver somniferum in the back and smoke that for my aching ankle. You know, the problem is, marijuana or cannabis has hundreds of different chemicals in it. And I'm all for finding out what those chemicals are and using them to treat pain or, appetite issues. But I feel like we don't know enough about, quote unquote, medical marijuana to say that it's a medicine. It's a plant and it has 400 chemicals in it.
We have heard in the past, Dr. Michaels, about from people who say, you know, that marijuana shouldn't be used because it's a gateway drug. You run one of the largest addiction practices in the county, if not the country. I want to know what, in fact, is your experience with that?
A gateway drug is a complicated term. And what we now know is that there are multiple issues that predispose people to substance use. It has to do with parents and their attitudes and friends and their use, socioeconomic issues. So, you know, anything can lead to another behavior. You know, drinking can lead to other substance use. Your judgment is impaired and you're more likely to engage in other behaviors. I don't know if it's a gateway drug or just something that increases the risk of other addictive behaviors.
Russ in Waterford. Okay, Russ in Waterford, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My sister-in-law, I believe she's bipolar, but I know for a fact that crystal meth pretty much ruined her young adult life. And it seems that ever since she was attracted to crystal meth and was hooked on crystal meth, even though it appears that she's not doing it anymore, it just appears that she's never gotten any better. She just bounces around from various drugs to alcohol. And I just wondered if any of that is because of her initial foray with crystal meth. I just wondered if it affects you for the rest of your life.
Great question, Russ. We now have the ability to look at brains and the effects of drugs and alcohol. And stimulants can have a devastating, almost an Agent Orange kind of effect on our brain cells. So that's the bad news. When we look at those PET scans after someone has chronically used, cells die, there's decreased neurotransmitters. The good news is if someone can stay sober, we actually can grow our brains back. We can grow neurons and neurotransmitters. We have kind of this substance called neurotrophic factor that helps cells to grow. The trick is to stay sober and to live a very healthy lifestyle. And oftentimes people have to go into a residential program to regain sobriety and learn how to live in a healthy way. Has she done this?
Well, no. Unfortunately, I'll be very candid with you. She seems to think that every problem that she's ever had in her life was somebody else's fault. Mm. And so because she's not willing to accept that, she's bounced around from, I mean, she graduated. She was actually a child psychologist for 2 years before she became addicted to crystal meth. Mm. Was a soccer coach, and everything went south from there. And I assume that her bipolar diagnosis was legitimate and not something that she had conjured up. But I know she bounces around between alcohol, marijuana, whatever happens to be her drug of choice, and she's never really made what, and I'm not being judge and jury here, but she's never really made what I would say a concerted effort to accept the fact that she's got a problem and take herself out of the cycle. So I just wondered if, you know, I had heard all the devastating things. I didn't know that about if you could manage to stay away from crystal meth for a period of time that, and other drugs, obviously, that you could, so to speak, lead a normal life. I always wondered whether it had a lasting effect on you.
It has an effect, but you can heal, and there's a huge amount of support in the recovery network, so people can live beautiful, wonderful lives in recovery, but they need to fully engage in recovery. She has to address her substance use disorder and at the same time her bipolar disorder. So it's like a double whammy that she's struggling with. But there are...
Horrible. It's devastating. Her parents, mm-hmm. are elderly. And I think it's a personal issue with me because I'm an alcoholic. I stopped drinking 15 years ago, and I'm grateful for that. But when I see her, I never see her take any steps forward before she manages to fall back. And I think that's what's frustrating to both me and the rest of her family.
I would recommend that your family attend Al-Anon or Naranon meetings. These are free meetings, 12-step meetings that help families of users to gain some support, some community, some ideas about how to help.
Okay, if you have 1 second, I just have a question. In your opinion, do family interventions actually work?
They can be very successful. They are not all successful, but it doesn't sound like you have anything to lose at this point. You can call a program such as Hazelden or Betty Ford, and they will help you to find an interventionist who will come to your home and assist you in the process.
Hey, Russ, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sorry for taking your time.
Not at all. Great.
Good luck. I wish you the best.
Let's go to take a break, and then we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, Poughkeepsie. Graduate program in social work and graduate and undergraduate programs in nursing, hosting an open house July 10th, 6 till 8 p.m. adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. Identity Eyewear, Albany. Customized eyewear fittings, European frame lines, and more. Identity Eyewear, it's what sets you apart. EYE, DentityEyewear.net. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. Thomas Cole, National Historic Site, Catskill, New York, presenting their 2012 exhibition, Worlds Between, Landscapes of Louis-Rémy Mignot, open Thursday through Sunday, located near the Rip Van Winkle Bridge, thomascole.org. And Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, New York, local organic produce, vegetarian and vegan hot dogs and burgers, cold drinks, sunscreen, and bug spray for July 4th, sunflowernatural.com.
And we are back with the wonderful Dr. Jennifer Michaels. We're talking addiction, psychiatry, you name it, we're talking it. Let's go to Linda in Albany. Linda, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Yes. I'm just here listening to the program, you know, and like all these people are so upset with all this medication. I know sometimes you do have to take medication for some sickness, but you know, I think people are so over-medicating themselves, you know, and they're not even doing the right things, you know, before they get sick, like drinking alcohol and smoking, using drugs, you know. I'm speaking from the experience on what, you know, experience things that I see people does right now. And I think we should take responsibility to stop using all that drugs, alcohol, and all these wrong things they're doing, take good care of their bodies, eat right, and stop depending on all this medication they're taking. And people need to pray, you know, pray, get into deep medication and stop thinking about just the something to heal them. Because from my experience in my body, I don't drink, I don't smoke, you know, I meditate, and I'm close to 50 years old, and I get all these different symptoms, and I do not go to the doctor. I pray, and as it comes, it just goes away.
Okay, Linda, let's have the doctor respond.
No, I think healthy living is the best medicine, and then sometimes you need something more. So, Linda, I think what you describe is that foundation of health, spirituality, exercise, eating healthy foods, not using drugs or alcohol or not drinking in excess. But then sometimes things happen, or we're genetically predisposed to an illness, such as schizophrenia, depression.
Yes.
And then I would say go to your doctor and get some help. But what's wonderful is that healthy foundation will facilitate recovery from whatever you have going on.
Yes, I understand. Yes, I know you do have to go and get medication.
Sometimes,
some
right?
Sickness. Yeah, you do, but I work in the health field, telling you. There's people that they have all these medications, they've taken it, and I see they're drinking, they're using drugs, and like they're not healing. And then they're blaming it on that they're going to the doctors. The doctors wonder why they're not healing, So it's so much of this, The doctors wonder why they're not healing, but they're lying. A lot of them is lying to. Believe me, lying to the doctors. They're not doing the right things.
Also maybe lying to themselves, Linda.
Yeah, they're lying to themselves, and they're getting more sick. They're killing themselves,
Okay, Linda, thank you for the great call. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
you make a very important point. Thank you.
Yes, okay, bye. Thanks.
Bye. And to Sarah in Germantown. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to ask if you have any thoughts or anything to say about a connection between depression and fatigue and subclinical hypothyroidism.
Oh, yes, I have a lot to say about that, because hypothyroidism is extremely common in this country. It's more likely to present in women than men, and it's also oftentimes insidious in that, you don't present dramatically, but you feel a little more tired. You're gaining a little more weight. It's a little more difficult to concentrate. It sounds like most of us,
Right.
But we all should have our thyroids checked. I think it's 40 or above, or if you have a family history of thyroid issues. But symptoms can, I treat someone who suffered from fatigue and her symptom was, I can't get off the couch. I'm just not motivated. I watch TV and that's all I do. And we checked her thyroid. She had an elevated TSH, which is the sign that her thyroid was inactive or not active enough. We gave her thyroid medication and she's doing great. My worry is a lot of it goes undiagnosed. Do you have that problem, Sarah?
No. It's a child, our daughter was recently diagnosed with it, and I was kind of wondering because it seems to have led to weight gain, which this is with levothyroxine, which surprised me. And then when I looked online, I noticed a number of people complaining about weight gain with the hypothyroid medication. And so I wondered, is that normal or what,
So hypothyroidism, untreated, is associated with weight gain.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
Yes, and then when someone is treated with an adequate level and given some time, weight issues should diminish, or they should not continue to gain weight. It's important for your daughter to keep having her levels checked. She may need an adjustment in her levothyroxine. So that would be my thought. Mm-hmm. Is she still tired? With her?
No, I think she feels much better.
Okay. So,
I was just wondering about this side effect. And then someone else said to me, that some doctors prefer to prescribe Synthroid instead of the generic form, which I guess is levothyroxine.
I would suggest you talk with your daughter's doctor and just make sure that there's constant surveillance and checking and awareness of symptoms so that she can get the full benefit of her treatment.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Sarah.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now, some of these medications, Doc, have... you're prohibited from taking other things like calcium, for example, when you're taking the thyroid drug. Is that not true?
you're prohibited from taking calcium
at the same time.
At the same time. You know, that's a good point, that it's a little difficult to take thyroid medication. It's typically given in the morning. It has to be on an empty stomach.
Yeah.
And you have to wait an hour to eat. So it's not fun taking this medication. And you have to avoid calcium-type medications. So, you know, we have to look at efficacy and, you know, compliance with all of these different rules. So that's something else for the previous caller to be aware of.
Well, I just learned something. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to Mark in Red Hook. Mark, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Yeah.
I'm a member of NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, and our chapter in the Mid-Hudson Valley recently got a visit from somebody representing a new company that deals with pharmacogenomics, targeting gene study, which allows doctors to determine what the predisposition is likely to be on specific medications, which is designed to eliminate a lot of trial and error, which obviously is always a problem with somebody with a clinical mental illness, a chemical imbalance. So often, as already has been said in the show several times, people try something, and they try something else, and they have to keep ongoing sometimes for a number of years to try and get it right. And I'm just wondering if you've heard about this and if you have any idea about studies. This particular company is backed by the Mayo Clinic.
Okay. Great question. And we're just beginning to understand the ramifications and direct our treatment based on pharmacogenomics. Let me give you one example in the world of alcoholism. There are subtypes of alcoholism. You know, we may think, oh, an alcoholic's an alcoholic, but we actually understand now that some alcoholics are alcoholic because of a gene abnormality in the serotonin system. Or it could be a gene abnormality in the norepinephrine system. And based on that, that what we call polymorphism, or this abnormality in a specific system, we can prescribe a medication that best addresses that abnormality. So that's one example of an awareness of someone's genetic coding and prescribing to meet the needs of that genetic code. Does that make sense?
Yes. And do you see this as something that is likely to grow and continue, so that doctors and patients will be better able to predict how they'll respond to the various medications?
Yes, Mark, and I think that's how we will better tailor the treatment to the patient's needs, to the patient's genes. I mean, it's really an amazing new science for treatment in psychiatry.
And could I just add one comment to the gentleman that called about the young woman that had the problem with the crystal meth but was also diagnosed as bipolar? You know, it just seems to me that if she's diagnosed as bipolar, then a lot of the interventions or treatments that might work for alcoholism may not work for her. You know, it's my understanding that there's a difference at times between how to treat drug addiction and alcoholism and somebody with a real mental illness like bipolar. So my only suggestion is that maybe, like through an organization like NAMI or Family to Family Program, something like that, it might be worth also looking in that direction.
Yeah, Mark, that's a good point. I would add that what that girl suffered was what we call co-occurring disorders, a substance use disorder co-occurring with another mental health issue. And there now are interventionists who are savvy enough to understand that both illnesses have to be addressed at the same time, and programs, inpatient programs that treat co-occurring disorders. So that would be the direction to take in that situation.
Mark, right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
New rule, you have to turn your cell phone off before you make the call.
Yes. Okay. I went for my pocket when I heard that.
Yeah, yeah. You have the same signal. Let's go to John in Poughkeepsie. John, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you, Dr. Michaels, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I heard you mention a correlation to dioxin, Agent Orange effects on the brain.
You know, John, you're picking up on what I said about the damage that can occur when someone uses toxic drugs chronically. So if someone uses methamphetamine in extreme, daily, chronic use, it can devastate your neurons, which actually look like little trees. You know, the cells in our brain almost look like little trees. The dendrites are like the branches of the trees. And drugs can kill, devastate those little trees, those little neurons. And to me, it looks almost like the effects of Agent Orange on a forest. We also see that effect with serotonin neurons and ecstasy. There's a devastation that occurs with chronic severe ecstasy use.
Okay, I understand what you mean, because for 10 months out of 13 months, Agent Orange was in my water supply.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry if I
no,
stirred
okay.
that up.
It was, thank you.
It was just I was using it as an analogy.
Right, exactly.
I'm sorry about that, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, and have a fun day.
Okay, and we'll go from one John to another. John in Albany. You're on, John.
Hi, how's it going?
Well,
so I suffered from anxiety and inability to concentrate in high school. And I went undiagnosed, and I had some difficulties in high school. And then I went to college and used marijuana recreationally and saw a distinct improvement. Graduated college at magna cum laude, 3.8, held down a job for the whole time in school and had zero anxiety. And then when I graduated and wanted to join the workforce, I decided to stop and started experiencing anxiety again and went to see my doctor and sent me to a clinical psychologist. And he gave me an attention and deficit variables test and said that I was definitely having some issues with my prefrontal cortex, which I thought I had, and I started taking L-tyrosine to see if, increasing L-tyrosine maybe would increase the dopamine. And they put me on a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, and it made me feel horrible. And now I'm not smoking marijuana, and I'm not taking any medications. And they said I would have to go take a lot more tests if I wanted to take a dopamine reuptake inhibitor like Adderall, which I have no desire to take an amphetamine. Basically struggling with anxiety and the inability to think clearly in a lot of ways, especially with abstract thought, struggled very hard with mathematics and abstract thinking in high school. But in college, when I smoked marijuana, I was on the ball. And I would just wonder what suggestions you have for that. I don't want to be dependent on an illicit drug, but I also don't want to be dependent on an amphetamine.
You know, I wonder if it would be helpful for you to see another doctor and get a consultation, someone who specializes in treating attentional issues. The other thing you could do is just have a full neuropsychological testing performed so that you can have a better understanding of how your brain functions. There are non-stimulant alternatives for attentional issues, but I think you need to see a specialist and get another opinion.
Yeah, I guess the biggest issue is that when I looked into getting a comprehensive neuropsychological test, my insurance doesn't cover it, and it's slightly, I did very well in college. I enjoyed being able to think clearly, and now I definitely have an inability and an anxiety, which I think that they're related. My general practitioner thought it might be OCD, and he wasn't sure, and clinical psychologist didn't think that was, so I'm interested, but don't know what to do since my insurance doesn't cover a comprehensive neuropsychological test.
Well, a couple of thoughts. You can appeal the lack of coverage. You have to make a case and appeal it. You also can look into programs that have training institutes, and sometimes those programs will have you see a student, an advanced student, who will perform the study for you. So I would say don't give up, but you may have to be more tenacious in pursuing options.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Best of luck.
Have a good one.
Okay, and very quickly, Glenda in Catskill. Glenda, we're going to be out of time in a minute, so you got to make it real fast.
Okay, I just am responding to Jennifer, who had called in, was looking for a way to actually get off her medication. And I have a grandson who has autism, and we have discovered a book. It's called The Gut and Psychology Syndrome. And this is a doctor in England who actually cured her autistic child. And what she found was through actually healing the lining of the gut, she was actually able to cure him, and then
okay,
she
Glenda,
patients on it.
Glenda,
and,
what's the
and
name?
The result is called Gut and Psychology Syndrome by Natasha McBride. She's an English author, and she actually discovered that she could actually help schizophrenic, bipolar. All
okay.
Kinds of,
well, Glenda, I appreciate the call. As I said, we're sort of out of time. We appreciate your call very much.
Okay, gut and psychology syndrome. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who was on the phone. I want to thank Dolores in Woodstock, who is never going to get on the phone today, but will the next time, I'm sure. Let me say that support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest medical practice physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Katie Britton for answering the phones. Our producer is Patrick Donges. Again, thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. On tomorrow's program, an open forum with Ray Graff. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.